everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks. It's Batman late summer, Batman early fall here on Uncanny Treks. We're counting down. We're maybe going to cover the Penguin show. Maybe we'll even cover Joker 2. But before that, we're going to talk about some Batman comics. We're going to talk about Batman City of Madness. How are you doing tonight, Matt?
Doing pretty well, Bob, man. Batman City of Madness is scary. It's a horror-centric, freaky. Okay. Not your usual Batman.
Mad, maybe?
About what?
Mad?
Mad, yes. Perhaps? Definitely mad, Bob. Mad. Mad as a Hatter.
Well, that's good.
Who happens to make a very small appearance.
On the one hand, you say it's not your usual Batman, and you're right. And then, on the other hand, we are in the era of what people have been calling weird Batman with Scott Snyder and Chip Zdarsky and Grant Morrison. It's been going on for nearly 20 years at this point. This is definitely pretty unique compared to the style you'd get for normal Batman comics, although it does harken back to some major stories of the past.
Yeah, before we get too far into this, Bob, though, let's just for the listeners, the pronunciation, Cthulhu, is that correct?
No, Cthulhu.
Cthulhu. There we go. Cthulhu. Sorry, I always say it wrong, even though I know what the creature is. I've read the stuff. I just can never say it right. It's always messing me up.
It's a harder C and then a softer T and H, almost as if your lips and tongue are maybe not altogether solid. Maybe they're sliding down your face when you say it, Matt, when you softly slur.
Like you're worshiping something.
Exactly, like you're worshiping something. So this is Lovecraft Batman. I think we did talk about the film adaptation of the other big Lovecraft Batman, The Doom That Came to Gotham.
Yes, we did.
Do you prefer The Doom That Came to Gotham or do you prefer City of Madness?
Honestly, at this point, I prefer City of Madness, although this makes me want to go back and rewatch The Doom That Came to Gotham. It's been a while.
If I remember correctly, and it has been a while, although it hasn't really been that long, but it has been a while. I feel like this is better at getting the feeling of a Cthulhu story, whereas The Doom That Came to Gotham is better at getting plot points, but less about the feeling.
That does make sense. The Cthulhu stuff does come off much darker and like in tone with the comic book in writing, as opposed to the visual medium of moving animation.
People like to complain that there haven't been that many Cthulhu movies. And there haven't been that many Lovecraft adaptations, and a lot of the ones that don't get it right, or they're weird or flawed, weird in a bad way, not weird in capital W weird way, flawed in some way. And I think it is a very hard thing to strike in live action stuff like film and TV, but in writing, because there's been innumerable numbers of Lovecraft clones in writing and other weird writers, Lovecraft's not the only weird writer. And then in comics, I think you can do it too. Even though people usually say comics aren't very well suited for horror, and there's an argument to be made there that they're not, I think they actually are probably better suited to doing Lovecraft, Cthulhu, weird stuff than film and TV.
This story is structured with the three issues, and we'll talk about this as we get into our coverage of this, but the second issue to me is a way of carrying into the third, getting him where he needs to be. And building that atmosphere and building that tension. And that's where all the Lovecraftian stuff comes from. And that's hard to do in film unless you do a very slow burn that most people don't want to do in a 2-hour film.
That's true. That's true. So our writer artist here is Christian Ward. Have you ever heard of him, Matt?
I have not, no.
He's pretty acclaimed as an artist, but I think this is his first big project where he's writing as well. I first became aware of him maybe about 10 years ago. Matt Fraction at Image wrote a science fiction odyssey adaptation, the art for it. Absolutely gorgeous, beautiful art. Annoyingly, like so many Image projects from 10 years ago, I think it only went like 2 trades and never finished. The other thing I really like from him, there was a Black Bolt series probably about 2018 or so that Saladin Ahmed wrote and Christian Ward did the art on, and it was really good. I know I say Black Bolt and Matt immediately goes to sleep for understandable reasons, but it's one of, I would say, maybe 3 or 4 good Inhumans comics. There's not a lot of them, but it's one of them.
The art in this is very stylistically reminds me of A Serious House on a Serious Earth, which we'll talk about in a little while.
Dave McKean's art in Arkham Asylum, Serious House on Serious Earth is very much an influence here. One last thing is that both the Science Fiction Odyssey adaptation and the Black Bolt 12-issue series are very much Christian Ward doing his Jack Kirby versions. He's doing a lot more than that, but he's doing a lot of Jack Kirby homages in them, and it's big science fiction action drawing as opposed to the more creepy, weird drawings of this. Let's just plunge right into issue number one, Matt. The first thing that struck me was I really found this in a Two-Face striking, which is fun because this is coming off. We just reviewed all 10 episodes of Batman the Caped Crusader, and that also had a very different Two-Face from the usual representation, although this is a very different Two-Face from that still. So I was really enchanted with this Two-Face. He has these yellow lines that emanate from his scarred face. You already mentioned Grant Morrison and Dave McKean's Arkham Asylum, where the Joker has red lines that come out of his mouth, and you kind of get that with the scarred face.
Right.
Two-Face in this. You get these red word balloons. It was really, it's not quite the same vibe as the lines and word balloons in Arkham Asylum Serious House, but still, it was pretty remarkable and immediately put me in mind of thinking of them as similar.
The lines are just supposed to give him that look that he's just crazy and like his mind is just coming out of his head. The little yellow squiggly lines that make up half of his mouth and that bad eye, they look like they're pulled off scrawlings from an asylum wall, the way they're drawn, which I thought was creative. And then the blue lines out of his head give me the impression that that side of his head is always buzzing. Freaks me out. Like there's always something going on.
The same thing if you read Charles Schulz's Peanuts or another comic strip, and there's the lines used to indicate the character is angry or sad, lines emanating out of their head. But here it's just constant. It doesn't really. It
doesn't go away. And it has no purpose. It has no actual purpose. It's other than when you see always on edge.
He's always buzzing. So another thing from number one that I thought was really interesting is that we have one of the owls, the Court of the Owls, are big in this comic, which is cool because even though the Court of Owls have been around for coming up on 12 years, 13 years, they still feel fresh. They're pretty heavily defined by how Scott Snyder used them in that first story, right?
Right.
And so it is interesting that when you get new versions of the owls that incorporates them in the Batman universe and makes them feel, it's more like, oh, here's your version of Catwoman. Here's your version of Two-Face. As we get closer to that and it gets further away from that original story, I just always think owls' insertions are pretty interesting.
Because we're seeing new interpretations of characters that we don't really consider classic yet. They're still new to us, but we are getting different versions of them. Yeah. That's awesome.
I don't actually like the Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo run. Greg Capullo is a great artist, but I have a lot of problems with Scott Snyder's climaxes in that run. But I do like the concept of the owls, and I do like their design. And yeah, I do think they can be a class of the Batman mythos. So watching them slowly become that is fun for me. In this one, we have an owl kill a guy named Mr. Reeves. Is that supposed to maybe be a Matt Reeves reference, Matt? The guy who directed a couple Planet of the Apes movies and most recently The Batman?
It's possible, Bob. But also, there's actually a Mr. Reeves who has worked for Wayne Enterprises in The Dark Knight Returns. Do you remember that character?
No, I don't remember that at all.
That would be the dude who tried to blackmail Bruce Wayne, Bob, and tell everybody that Batman and Bruce Wayne are one of the same. People claimed it was Christopher Nolan's version of the Riddler, Mystery. But I did some research, too, just on this character. I was wondering if it came from the comics, and it did, Bob. Arthur Reeves was a Denny O'Neill character back in the late 60s who was meant to be an anti-Batman, anti-vigilante agenda type thing going.
Oh, okay. I'd totally forgotten about him, but now that you say that, that makes sense.
Well, Bob, he's the most obscure character in the world.
He's a city councilman, right? I think he's more early 70s. Matt, do you remember in the Scott Snyder Court of the Owls stuff, did they ever present them as worshiping Athena?
I don't remember specifically what they worship. I don't think Athena.
It makes a lot of sense for them to worship her. The owl is one of her major symbols, yeah. Right? Another thing I did really like in this comic was that we have basically what you could call a BLM plot in a Batman comic, which in some ways you think you would see more of that than you actually do. But we have this kid we're introduced to, I believe his name is Giovanni, mm-hmm. who has come to Gotham looking for revenge because his father was on a business trip to Gotham, and worth stressing that both are African-American, And the father was executed by a cop. Even though his father is just a businessman minding his own business, Giovanni is coming to get revenge on the cop who murdered his father.
I was rooting for this kid so hard to just beat that corrupt cop. Come on.
Get that cop, baby. Get that cop. And then one page, this was 23 in the file I was looking at, but the numberings might be a little different for people. But it was page 23 in issue number one. I was already thinking this was Serious House on Serious Earth territory, but just the images are so like Dave McKean's art on Serious House on Serious Earth that I was like, yeah, we're definitely in a sequel territory with that. And it also has a neat color trick on page 23 of a red path going up to the asylum, which I don't know if you've ever heard of this graphic novel. It's called Through the Woods by Emily Carroll. She's an indie artist and it's from about 2015, but it's really lovely. It's Edgar Allan Poe, Nathaniel Hawthorne style horror stories, but with a lot of art, like what you see on page 23 here. Really cool red tentacles and red paths and red breaths and red blood.
Were you good with it being considered possibly a sequel to Serious House on Serious Earth?
I am. Serious House on Serious Earth is a controversial comic. Not everybody digs it, but I dig it. I mean, I got it, I think, at a relatively young age, probably 15 or so.
Yeah, we read it in our teens.
It's great. It's been at least 10 years since I've actually read the thing, but I always appreciate when the Arkham mythos that graphic novel builds is incorporated into Batman comics, which somewhat happened in the Shadow of the Bat series in the 90s. I like the sense of the Batman villains as these horror archetypes that both City of Madness and Serious House on Serious Earth play with in different ways.
It is fascinating how they do this. And they're hit or miss here. We'll talk about that as we go in further in our coverage. But man, like the Two-Face here is great. Yeah, they always get Two-Face right.
If I remember right, in the original graphic novel, they're doing the gimmick where they're trying to wean him off the coin. And they're trying to wean him onto more complex
like dice and stuff. And then by the end of it, he's having to roll 5 dice to determine whether he can go to the bathroom or not. It's just completely messed him up.
Trying to get him off the binary. I think they get him on tarot at a certain point. Which is cool. So another question I had, Matt, on 24, we're introduced to a Dr. Adams. Is that a name I should recognize? It didn't ring any bells.
She is the doctor from Serious House and Serious Earth, Bob. She's the one that's always smoking. Specifically why they gave her a cigarette, and she's on every panel smoking the damn thing.
It's nice. Okay, I do remember the doctor smoking from looking. I was looking through to make sure that the Two-Face was similar to the Two-Face in Arkham, and he's not. He's in some ways maybe more similar to the Joker. Another concept I thought was great here is we have Two-Face has his own signal, which is pretty funny, especially since it's a signal. At this point, I thought it was coming from outer space in Cthulhu, but it's from Gotham Blow. But nonetheless, I thought that idea was pretty great.
My favorite part of this page, Bob, is like there's a 6-part panel in the center.
And we're on page 29 for people.
It's on page 20. And on the left, you have the unscarred side of Harvey's face. And he's mentioning the signal. And then the next panel immediately to the right, you have a Batman. And he's asking, where is the signal from? And then on the next panel, you have Harvey's right side of his face, the scarred side. He's confirming where it is. It's like Batman is in Harvey's head, the way it's visualized. Mm-hmm. And then the next panel has some signal. It's at the bottom where the signal's coming from, followed by a really bright light, but it's the actual bat signal. They choreographed that properly to where it looked like Batman was in Two-Face's head and then pulling information out of it. I just like the way that was visualized.
Yeah, it's really great panel placement. It's also a really great example of what you especially were talking about with the line work off Two-Face, where in that rightmost panel of Two-Face's scarred face, it's looking both the yellow lines and blue lines emanating off Two-Face, but then you have this funky, more abstract, squiggly lines that represent the signal.
Right.
The next page, too, we have a beautiful image of the bat signal actually on Arkham. Pretty quickly down the page on 31, we meet the Terrible Trio. Do you remember the Terrible Trio?
Yeah, that's Shark, Fox, and Vulture. They were actually in an animated episode, Batman animated series.
They're actually pretty good villains in some ways to have in a more horror-themed or more magic-themed Batman story, because they do have the earth, air, and sea motif going on.
Sometimes they wear masks, and sometimes they're just anamorphic creatures, so depending on who's writing. They've been injected.
Yeah, it's interesting because Shark and Vulture to me look really creepy, but Fox just almost looks like a furry.
Fox is no longer scary, and vultures don't scare me either. I think buzzards are scarier than vultures.
I will say, though, about the fox, though, he almost becomes creepy because of how innocuous he's looking. He loops back around.
If I was in this room sitting with someone in that fox mask, I would be creeped out. But just seeing him, if it was a bank robbery and they're all wearing animal-themed masks, I probably wouldn't be as scared of the fox.
Yeah.
But if I came in my living room and the fox is sitting across from me in my recliner, yeah, that would be freaky.
Have you seen Reservation Dogs on Hulu?
No.
I strongly recommend it. It's a really fun show. It's very short. It's one of those experimental comedies that FX and Hulu do, like Louie or Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And so it's only 30-minute episodes. One season is 8 episodes, and then 2 seasons are 10 episodes. So there's not a lot of it. There's some great stuff in season 3, but season 3 does feel a little pointless if you watch it. So just to warn you about that.
Okay.
But it's set on the Muscogee or Creek Reservation in Oklahoma, mostly made by and starring indigenous people. And one of the little gags they do throughout all 3 seasons, owls have an important or sometimes cursed role in a lot of different tribal cosmologies. So whenever they show an image of an owl or like somebody with an owl shirt or a statue of an owl, they'll always blur its eyes out on the TV show, which is really fun. It really cracked me up the first time I noticed it. Despite being a Twin Peaks fan, Matt, I've never been perturbed by owls before. But it's gotten to the point now, if I see an owl image, that's what I expect. I was on a bus a couple of weeks ago with a white woman. Just a white woman was there. I wasn't with her, but she was there. And white women love their owl tattoos, Matt. And so she has a huge tattoo of her owl on her shoulder. And I just turned and looked, and I saw the tattooed owl, and I saw its eyes. And I literally, holy shit, she drew in. And the entire bus think I'm schizophrenic.
That's insane, Bob. Just going to let you know that. You've done something to yourself that's, having hallucinations about these owls.
It's not a hallucination.
If you're completing the image in your head, Bob. Yes, it's a hallucination. That's what it is. You're seeing things that aren't there.
I'm not completing the image. I'm upset because it's not blurred out.
Okay. So you're upset that it's not, you're not actually able to see it. You're like, you think it should be complete.
I think it should be covered up. It's not Whereas before,
I don't know what's worse, Bob. I don't even know what's worse at this point. Because at least one way you have an excuse that you're just insane. The other, you're just...
I've been trained by the boom tube. What else am I supposed to do?
Yeah, well, on top of this too, Bob, you also introduced me to owl legs, which I don't remember if we brought up on the podcast, but Google owl legs.
I think I've told that story on the podcast. That's actually the only anecdote in order to make owls... For me, at least, if you want to make owls not creepy, you just need to look at their funny little legs.
You ruined it for me. Trust me. You ruined it for me with that. No joke.
Matt's like, I can never watch Twin Peaks again.
No, they're not scary. Not in the least bit. Except when they come and they like take away your little dogs. That's the only time they're scary. They never took my dog. They've never taken my dog away, but I know of people who have lost dogs that way. So be careful out there.
Oh, if they took away my cat, I might be happy. Just as I scratch her chin.
Poor thing.
All right, Matt. So on page 36, you had an image for us.
Yeah, Bob, we get our first look at the Batman from below. Are mouth tentacles the first thing you always associate with Cthulhu?
Not the first thing in general, but visually, yes, the first thing.
Oh, in my mind, that's the first thing that pops up.
Matt sees a tentacle porn, and he's like...
Yeah, if you say Cthulhu, I'm like, oh, there it is, tentacles.
There's a part of the mythos of the Court of the Owls I've never really loved. I've never really loved the talons. And so on page 40, we get introduced to a talon. And Matt, doesn't he look like Thor to you?
Yeah, the talon is ridiculously buff and blonde, but he's laying on like a red cushion thing. So it looks like Thor's cape.
Yeah,
it looks weird. Are all the talons, they all look like this, or is just this one?
No, man, I actually read that Talon series back in like 2014, 2015, whatever. And I don't think so. I think Christian Ward was maybe trying to do something by going with this Aryan-looking talon to make it more creepy.
The issue ends with Two-Face speaking with his version from below. Are you okay if I just refer to this character as Half-Face? For some reason, when you split his face along the X-axis, I just want to call him Half-Face.
I will allow it.
All right. So from this point forward, when we're referring to the character of Harvey Dent found in the Gotham below, that is Half-Face. Let's talk favorite visual, Bob.
Favorite visuals. Page 10, we have a Batman breaking an Our Two Faces goon's arm on an all-white background, but it's not in a panel. And it's a very cool, very creepy, but also very disgusting image, the angle that Batman has the guy's arm at. On 14, right after the owl kills Arthur Reeves or Mr. Reeves, he's walking out of this subterranean elevator into a brownstone hallway. It's one of those high-quality stone things where there's lines in the stone, and the lines in the stone almost put panels on the page. I thought that was really, really astonishingly well done. What are your two favorites, Matt?
My favorite is page 36, and we see the Batman from below eating shark's brains. That's an excellent picture. It's a full page. And then on page 43, we have another full page of the Batman from below flying with the boy that he basically kidnapped.
Yeah.
That's my second favorite image.
43 is a great page because it also has one of my two favorite lines of dialogue, which is Two-Face below saying, Batman below has the boy and he means to, and yeah, the boy is Giovanni, who we talked about earlier. Batman below has the boy and he means to make a Robin out of him. It's funny because there was a joke that I really liked earlier in the book on page 20. A streetwalker, as Giovanni's walking through Gotham, yells at him, want to be my Robin, baby?
Right.
Great joke, but also really great foreshadowing.
Setup, yeah. My favorite line is when Dr. Adams goes, this isn't a hospital, it's a haunted house full of people who'd rather kill than heal, on page 27.
Very nice, very nice. So, Matt, almost immediately in issue number 2, we get Flamingo. Do you remember Flamingo?
Yeah, I do remember him. And I remember he had a Flamingo cave and he drove a pink motorcycle.
Do you remember, he's from Grant Morrison's Batman and Robin series. Do you remember what pop star he's definitely a clone of?
It's not Ricky Martin, is it?
Think the motorcycle.
Oh, the motorcycle.
Think the color scheme.
Help me out, Bob.
Think a great movie, two-word title. Something Rain.
Oh, purple. He's supposed to be Prince. No, Bob, I don't get Prince vibes from him. No, maybe, oh. I mean, with the motorcycle, maybe, but I don't get Prince vibes from this character. He's a little too evil.
This is a slightly different version of him, but if you go back to the Grant Morrison Batman and Robin, no, it's Prince.
Oh, it's Prince.
The first issue he appears in, it's the cover of Purple Rain.
I did, maybe now seeing him, knowing that this is meant to be almost like a tribute to Prince in some way.
That's the Grant Morrison and I think Cameron Stewart version of Flamingo.
Right, this
the
one's
Christian
not.
Christian Ward version is more like this German Euro trash guy, right? Which is, it's charming in its own way, but it's very sleazy.
We also see Ventriloquist, Bob.
Yeah, Matt, we see Ventriloquist kill Scarface. Did that make you sad?
Yeah, he bashes that thing's face to pieces. I mean, just slams it into the ground over and over again. But what I find slightly more unsettling is not just that, but when Bullock is cradling the dummy like it's a child.
That's
on the
great.
Next page.
I totally overlooked that. That's a
yeah, it's on page 9. I don't like when, that.
Another reference question, Matt, on page 11. So I don't think this is usually the name of the guy who throws acid in Two-Face's face, but here the guy's name is Joe Burton. Should we take that to be a Tim Burton reference? Although the fact that I thought we had an Arthur Reeves or a Matt Reeves reference earlier, you know, and you punctured that one.
Yeah, I think that he's trying to say that Joe is short for Joel, maybe, for Joel Schumacher. So it's like Joe Burton, some weird combination.
I hadn't even thought of the Joel Schumacher potential of Joe. That's a good
thing. He's apparently important to Half-Face as well. So that's all we really know. Is it Sal Maroni that throws it in his face? And
it's Boss Maroni he's trying to put into prison. And in some versions, Maroni may do it, but I think in most versions, it's just somebody Maroni in Maroni's employ.
Yeah, somebody hires. Okay.
Matt, did you want to summarize the rest of it?
Yeah, this issue was really just like a vehicle to get Batman and Talon into the scary place beneath Gotham to rescue the missing kid and to kind of give us a better understanding of how Gotham Below operates. Like this issue was full of, this is the issue we're talking about that sets the tone of the entire story. It's weird, but I feel like we're introduced to everything in the first section, but that we already know, well, things we already know about. We already know about Gotham. We already know about all those characters. We know everything about them in the first issue. Then the second issue, we really start to understand where this Batman from below comes from and everything involved with it. And in the final issue, of course, we have the climax where all the action takes place. I think following that trajectory is how the Lovecraftian stories kind of build.
Like that makes sense. Yeah.
You have to have that atmosphere built up in the middle to keep you going for that suspenseful ending.
The transitions and the interstitials are pretty important, especially when you're going into other worlds, right? So you're a little bit doing Cthulhu, but you're a little bit doing Lovecraft's other major cycle of stories, which is the Dream Quest cycle. There's a bit of that, or you're going to another world.
And the plot of this is so basic too, in the grand scheme of things. It's, oh no, earthquake opens up door, evil character breaks free, kidnaps boy to take him back to his world to corrupt him. How will Batman rescue this child? That's really the story. I mean, but if that's your basic outline, a basic premise, then you have to really build on it to make it interesting. And that's what they're doing here with this issue specifically.
One other thing I just wanted to say broadly, which I skipped over in my notes, is it is interesting that the Bat family plays a pretty big role, maybe not a huge role. There's a lot of Alfred and Barbara Gordon focus in the first issue, and then there's a lot of Nightwing or Dick Grayson focus in the second issue. And so it is interesting that even though it's, in some ways, it's a follow-up to Serious House on Serious Earth, in other ways, it's very much, this is a, you know, a 21st century Batman. It's after Scott Snyder's run. It's after Grant Morrison's. It's after the more thorough combining of Batman with the Bat family, right?
Right. And yeah, you have to have that Bat family piece, which you did not have in the original Arkham on Serious Earth, because that wasn't really a thing then. You just had Batman. You had the characters, but they weren't a Bat family per se like they are now.
Batgirl was retired, I think, she'd already been killing Joked by the time that graphic novel came out.
Yeah.
Had been retired before that. And then at that point, I don't think Batman and Nightwing were really on speaking terms.
Bob, when it comes to favorite visual for this particular issue, it's got to go to page 40 for me. On page 40, there is a full page comparison between Ventriloquist Mother giving him Scarface and Batman handing Dick the Robin uniform that I thought was really powerful. And once again, fits in with the theme we're going to see towards the end of this issue, toward the end of this three issue run.
The message of this page is good parents send their kids to military school, right? They don't give them toys.
That must be it, Bob. I don't know. I don't think that's what it's trying to. I think it's trying to say that they're similar. I don't think it's trying to say one is better than the other. Yeah. I think you missed the message.
Matt, one of them, the page before, just carved a mouth into his hand. The Robin outfit is a better choice than the
But the Robin that you're still getting shot at by criminals every night. Robin is still not it's still not a good thing. They're both bad, is what it's trying to say, Bob. Batman making child soldiers is bad.
The other thing about this page I did want to point out is the Batman on this page really reminds me of Tim Sale's Batman, the guy who did The Long Halloween.
What was your favorite visual from these issues, or from this issue?
Well, on the subject of Batman-Robin relations, on page 14, Giovanni, the future Robin below, or the potential Robin below, is talking to Batman below, and there's a panel where Batman below turns to Giovanni, and he almost has like a hurt expression. Even though he has tentacles, and I just thought that was cute and funny.
You got to give credit to our artist here for that, Bob. If you can make a character that has tentacles for a mouth have an expression of hurt on their face,
that's really good acting.
That's good art. That's good artwork.
Very much so. And then the other was page 19 being dwarfed by this giant Cthulhu clay face, or cool image,
creepy body horror type stuff.
My favorite two lines of dialogue are on page 9. Batman pulls his abrupt exit on Bullock, and Bullock just says, yeah, good chat, you goddamn weirdo. Then on 28, Batman below, speaking to Robin below, says, as he points Robin at a cop who totally didn't kill Robin's dad, I think, he'll have killed someone's dad. Come on, we have torment to reap.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite lines as well, Bob, in this issue that you stole from me, because I thought that was hilarious. He'll kill somebody one day. Just go ahead and do it. My favorite line was on page 29. There's some picture or image of the Batman of the bullet from below. And our Batman goes, so this is him, the Batman of Gotham below. I don't see the resemblance. The picture is literally just Batman with some tentacles coming from his mouth. Same face, same bat symbol, same body type, cape, everything. I don't see the resemblance.
Well, it's pretty funny, and it could go into two directions. On the one hand, it could be Batman making a very dry joke, which I do sometimes like when Batman has very dry humor. Or it could just be that Batman is so focused on what he is and what he does that he can't see his resemblance. Either way, I think it's, pretty funny.
Or maybe our Batman sees himself as even scarier.
In issue number 3, we have pretty early on a big image of the bat demon Barbatos, which I forget the specifics, but obviously that's a reference to Peter Milligan's Dark Knight, Dark City. Great run if you haven't read it, and Grant Morrison's Return of Bruce Wayne. always nice to see the Bat Demon Barbatus.
Oh, yeah. Barbatus is the Bat God. Yeah, I forgot about him.
We also get Firefly below. He's fun. It's a cool image.
The visual of Firefly firing down on Batman while he's using his cape as a shield. I know we've seen that so many other times, like anytime he fights him, but every time it's so cool. They even did it in Batman Forever.
Oh, interesting. Then you had a question.
Oh, yeah, Bob. You buy the jabber that they have going on here about not killing in Gotham below. Does that seem unnecessary? Do we have to go into that here?
Honestly, I overlooked it as I believe it's your position the same as mine. My position is that I'm okay with Batman killing. I'm okay with Batman not killing. I just don't want stories that hinge on whether or not he should kill.
Justified. It's all about, is he justified?
Matt's been recently watching a different FX show, Justified.
If it's justified, I think it's okay. But I think that would make a good story, though. I don't know. But you're saying you don't want that. You don't want that to be the main dilemma of was it justified in him killing that person? You just wanted to kill him and be done with it. Okay. Yeah, that guy needed to go. Boom.
Yeah, Golden Age Batman kills, and that's fine and cool. But as long as it's people who have harmed large numbers of people, right?
Right.
I think that's fine and cool. But I just don't want to read stories about, was it justified or not in this circumstance? Oh, the reason Batman can't kill the Joker is that the Joker can't go away. And so I don't like stories of Batman angsting over whether he should kill the Joker or Mr. Zaz or the ventriloquist, because, well, obviously he won't, because they're valuable intellectual property for this huge corporation. So let's just not have the forced moral dilemma, right?
Right.
I don't know if you remember this line from Justified, but Matt really just wants an episode or an issue of Batman to end with Alfred turning to Batman and saying, Bruce, you're the angriest man I know.
There you go. That's exactly what I want, Bob.
So let's move on to something controversial, Matt. I think we have different opinions on Killer Croc.
Killer Croc below is this like crocodile looking, like he's a little large, giant crocodile. He looks like Leatherhead from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
The difference is he has a second mouth in his gut, which is really gross and really creepy.
Yeah. I think they could have been more creative with the design, especially if you're only going to show some of these villains. Come on. But yeah, that second mouth is disgusting with his tummy that just kind of opens up.
Well, the fact that it was so gross, I thought that was effective. Maybe I'm wrong because you remember Serious House and Serious Earth better than I do. But in Serious House on Serious Earth, Croc is portrayed as much more like just a sentient crocodile. There was a little gag later on in this issue where Talon shanks Batman as they're both in Arkham Below, which I thought was funny. And I also just thought it was interesting to have to, for Batman in Gotham Below, to have to deal with two doppelgangers, right? He's got both Talon and Batman Below, both of whom are doppelgangers.
So right, both coming at him.
I thought that was interesting. Yeah.
Well, Bob, this issue ends with Batman rescuing the boy. There's some sort of weird body horror transformation with Half-Face and Batman from below, and they arm a bomb to blow everything up. And then after they escape, Bruce gets the kid counseling instead of making him a Robin. So
progress, learning.
Good thing.
We also have the implication in the end of this story that Arthur Arkham below is Batman below. And now he's come to Gotham above and he's going to be the Joker or a Joker. So that raises some questions of, does the Joker already exist in this universe?
So Bob, let's talk favorite visuals.
What was yours, Matt?
Well, Bob, my favorite visual is on page 16, and it goes back to the scene where they enter the Gotham below and all the people come and start mobbing and ganging up on Batman. And he has all these people coming at him. And the page itself feels claustrophobic because it starts with Batman open, no issues, nobody there. And then it zooms in there's 16 panels, and each one zooms in a little further into the white of his eyes. And that slowly turns dark until he's able to escape it. He busts out on the next page I think that's when Croc comes in and like white knocks away a bunch of them. So it was just very intense on that one page building up that. I feared for Batman. I'm like, he's not gonna be able to breathe. And you could feel it slowly getting worse as each panel went down.
That's actually been something we've commented a lot on this art from Christian Ward. He's really good at panel placement and what have you.
Right.
Yeah. Mine's it's definitely less formally remarkable. I just really like the owl statue that shows up throughout these three issues, but I just felt like 23 was the most askew and cartoony rendering of the Court of Owls owl statue, and so I went with that as my favorite drawing of the owl statue.
All right, Bob, when it comes to favorite line, mine was on page 18, and it's Killer Croc saying, "Where's your sushi? I'm sorry, I'm saying, where's your sushi face I fancied?" Referring to, he's fighting the our Batman, not the Batman from below, so he's like, "Why is your face?" And
yeah.
He compares it to sushi, which is disgusting. I don't like sushi, so that makes me feel better.
Well, Matt, we are white guys from the South of a certain age.
It's true, Bob.
I don't like sushi either. So page 42 for me is my favorite line. Alfred says in his, you know, his journal, which is an old Silver Age thing of Alfred keeping a journal, which is the framing device for the whole comic. He says in his journal, "As Talon said, the crazies were Batman's," which on the one hand does kind of make it sound like it's the old Batman belongs in Arkham. But Alfred more means it as like Batman feels like a responsibility and a compassion for his rogues, except for the Joker. Which I like it. I always like when the animated series emphasize that compassion.
All right, Bob. So overall, pretty good.
Yeah, I guess we should say, Matt, we are ranking the comics as we go. We don't have that many yet. The internet ate a lot of our comics episodes, as sometimes happens. So currently our list right now is the number one, the Hickman Fantastic Four run. Number two, the Sanford Green and Hickman Doom one-shot. And then number three, that Werewolf by Night one-shot from last year. So on that list, Matt, where would you put City of Madness? Number one, Fantastic Four by Hickman.
Okay, I want this below that.
Number two, Doom.
Below that.
So below Doom, above Werewolf by Night.
There, yes.
So this has been Uncanny Treks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a good night.
Thank you for listening.